Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, my name is Michael Pavone. Welcome to Fork Tales. Today we're joined by a very dear friend of mine, Jim Herr, Senior Vice President of Sales, Marketing, and R&D at Herr's, one of the country's best-known snack brands and a Philadelphia favorite. We're going to talk about flavor innovation, building a loyal fan base, growing a family business, and how Herr's continues to strengthen its Philly roots. Jim, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be on here to talk a little bit about our company. I'm excited to do it.
Awesome. Well, Jim and I go way back. I know the Herr's story. It's a remarkable one, and I'm excited for you to tell it. So, okay, Herr's has been around for a long time. Your grandfather founded the company in 1946. It's family owned and operated. What parts of the company's founding still show up in the way the brand operates today? And if you could, tell us a little bit about the lineage, about your grandfather and then your father and all the folks that have been running this brand and a part of this Herr's brand.
Yeah, sure. Well, maybe I'll start with that a little bit, and then we can weave in a little bit about kind of what we're carrying through from the founder, which is kind of one of the more fun things about the business and what I get to do. So, founded in 1946 by my grandfather and grandmother. It's really a unique story in probably how a lot of family businesses are started. But his drive to start the company was not so much that he was interested in potato chip sales and frankly didn't know a lot about the snack food industry. I mean, it was kind of a burgeoning industry and something that he thought he would take a shot on. But the driver was really that he was a farmer. Mm-hmm. And he did well with that, and his family was all farmers. But he really wanted something where he could work with people. That was his driver. And he told his dad that he wanted to start a business. And back in that time, what you would do is look through the paper mm-hmm. and see what was available. And he saw this ad in the local paper in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, for a potato chip business. And I believe he spent $1,700 on the business, which was he ended up getting a loan for the entirety of that amount. So he didn't have anything to put down on it. And so he set off to start a company and start a business in the snack food industry. And I mean, to think back to that time and what kind of risk that he took to do that was pretty special. And he was certainly very entrepreneurial. And now some 80 years later, we obviously are a lot bigger company and a lot more complex and all that. But some of the interesting thing, I think, is that we were and are able to carry through some of the sentiment and what he cared about in business and what he enjoyed about it, which is really nice. So he ran the company for years and years and grew it. My dad took over in, he was pretty young at the time. He was in his early 30s, and then he ran the business for about 30 years. And currently, we've now transitioned into the third generation of ownership, and we have one of the second gen that's still involved, still chairman of the board. Mm-hmm. And I guess we like to think that he's there for support and keeps us all in line. And, you know, he's a very, very good person to have around. He's Ed Herr. But as of right now, we're primarily run by the third generation. And there's several of us that are in top management. So I have two cousins that are, one's the president CEO. I oversee kind of the consumer facing side of our business. And then another cousin that does the supply side. So it's been an interesting evolution over that time. We put a lot of effort into our planning in how we're going to do succession and how we transfer the company through the generations. And so far it's been going great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we work with a lot of family owned businesses, and I'm part of YPO, and a lot of it is family owned businesses. And there's so much complexity there. In one case, people think you're lucky because of the last name. In other areas, there's a lot of pressures and a lot of responsibilities. And it's quite quite a arduous process, if you will, to grow up in it, learn it, run it, and everything. I always respected, I'll say, you, your family, like all just good people. And I know that sounds really like maybe a lame thing to say, just good people, but it really is kind of who you are. In fact, you know, when we talk about like even the Hers brand, you know, there's a story that consumers see on the bag. You know, what does being family led brand mean inside Hers? Like, what else does that mean to you guys?
Yeah. Well, and I think that ties some back into the idea of us trying to carry through some of the legacy that was started. I mean, there's some key tenets of what has made our company successful over the years. And really, if you look at the differences between even 30 years ago, not back to the founding, but even 20 or 30 years ago, there was a lot of companies like us that were regional snack food mm-hmm. companies that were privately held, family run. And over time, most of those have either been bought by bigger companies or unfortunately gone out of business. So there's a lot of intentionality there that goes into it. And I think that's certainly contributed to how we've been able to keep the business going. But in terms of what it means to be family led, I heard something recently from a friend of mine who runs a much bigger family business than what we have. And the quote was that he manages his business for the quarter century, not for the next quarter.
Awesome. That's great.
So, you know, it kind of goes into the idea that you take a longer view.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we're interested in and that we put effort against or spend money against are really about longevity mm-hmm. more so than short-term gain. And I think that's probably a difference. And then, you know, kind of on the other side of that is really around the cultural side. We put a lot of effort into the culture, maintaining some of those key tenets that my grandparents were so fond of and emulated so well, like hard work, trust, being, mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned being good people. A lot of it's kind of, maybe you would refer to it as basic and things that are appropriate, not just for the business world, but just in life in general and how you treat people. So I think we've really strived to keep a lot of that front and center, even as the complexities and challenges that we face as a business continue to grow and change.
Yeah. And you know, you nailed it. And we again, as Quench, as an agency, we've worked with a lot of these family businesses. I mean, you know, Central Pennsylvania is known as the snack belt to a degree, right? And so we've mm-hmm. worked with a lot of companies. And, you know, there is, I love what you said about you're working for the next generation, basically, not the next quarter. And I think that's so true, because a lot of times with businesses, you got to make decisions like based on profitability right now. And because of that, you make a lot of, I'll say, quick decisions. And then, I'm not saying they're wrong, but you make some short-term decisions. You might, you know, cut some staff or cut company. You know, you just make decisions based on profit and timing and results and shareholder sentiment and, you know, the earnings report and all that. Whereas when you're an independent like we are, or like a family business, you're really looking down a much longer path, and you can take a longer view on things because you don't have to really answer to anybody at the moment. So it's a really important way to be. And I think it's awesome. And the other thing too is the goodness, if you will, or the kind of people that your grandparents were, I mean, it does emulate. It does come right through the whole company. I mean, you really feel that. And it's a compliment. It's a compliment to them and to the, you guys keeping that going. But now family business, there's gotta be some things that are complicated. Is there anything that's complicated about it? Like, what would you say are some of the things that you have to, you know, that you like watch outs or any advice you have on that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly positives to a family business. Some of the things we talked about, and there's also challenges. I think On the positive side, you know, the inherent passion that that you have for a family business, just because it's part of what you've always done and part of your family's legacy. You certainly have a drive there that's inherent, and I think that's pretty special. Even within our company, I think it's so fascinating to me that we have quite a few, so many employees that actually, to me, have the same mindset that we do in the ownership and the passion. You know, you can walk across to the plant across the street and see somebody running the chip line or working on packaging and extruded products or whatever it is. And you just see that inherent passion that they have for it. And it's certainly something pretty special about a family business. But there is challenges, you know, with everything. There's always pluses and minuses. I think one thing for when you read about generational changes within family businesses, you know, you have the first gen who is typically the risk taker and the entrepreneurial spirit, and they really, really have the idea and build it. And then you have the second generation who adds structure, and they're the managers, and, you know, they kind of make it more, more firm or able to be structured. And then when you get to the third generation is often when things go south. But one of the things that, so we're trying to buck that trend.
Not go south.
trying to hold it together. But one of the things that I think about and I've heard a lot and read about is complacency. You know, sometimes because you're tied into the history of the company and you have had the experience, whether it was your experience in the company or what you saw from your parents' generation, is that you sometimes see complacency and the idea that that's how we always did it. That's what got us here. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do. And that's something that I think we maybe kind of embraced that concern. And I would say my generation is maybe actually the opposite of that, you know, in a few ways, in trying to get back to the entrepreneurial spirit, having you know, growth expectations and really wanting to grow the company. So, you know, those are a few things. I think there's always, just like any businesses, we certainly face challenges in all parts of the business, but certainly a lot of upside with working with your family. It's fun. Sure.
That's awesome. You know, I'm really lucky. Again, Quench has got the privilege of working with you and your family for quite some time. And I got to tell a story here because it is about family business and everything. And I was with your Uncle Daryl, and this is like very early on. Like, I mean, probably within the first few months of our working relationship, and you had a family golf tournament, and he invited me, and he and I rode together. I was like, wow, oh my gosh, you know, this is awesome. And I think it was the first hole. He goes to me, he goes, kids? I'm like, yeah, yeah, I have two young daughters. I mean, they're probably like eight and 10 at the time, maybe something like that, whatever. And he goes, did you ever talk to him about working in the family business? I'm like, what? He's like, look, he goes, let me give you some advice. And I was like, wow. And he's like, always talk to your kids about working in the family business. Always make sure that they're welcome. He goes, they're going to learn a lot from seeing you. They're going to be exposed to it all their lives. So I never forgot that. In fact, a true story, I went home that night. Kids are sitting there. I said, girls, listen, if any day you want to come back in the agency business, and you know, you're always welcome. They kind of looked at me like, why do we want to do that, Dad? Why would we want to do what you do? You know, and it, like, you know, but their entire lives, they've known that door is always open. And I never forgot that was from your uncle, and it was just how he felt about family, and even just how important it is to expose the family to the opportunity. So I always gave him credit for that, and you know, I appreciated that big time. So
yeah.
So, I mean, like, hers has built an incredibly loyal following. What's the secret to earning that kind of loyalty?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know that I have a exact answer or a blueprint as to do that. I think, you know, one of the things, and we think about our following kind of in the Mid-Atlantic region here in the Philadelphia area. And one of the things that I think that we do is really stay true to who we are, you know, try to really be authentic. And, you know, it can be tempting sometimes to to try to be flashy or do something different to gain attention, but it's not really who we are. And I think what I would assume resonates with our consumers is that just the authentic nature of what our brand is. I also think to a degree, I think we, you know, if you think about my vision, right? So this is an opinion of one, but when I think about the people in the Philadelphia region, I think there's some really inherent traits, right? We're passionate people. I actually got the chance to go down to the Home Run Derby this week. And I think what a perfect illustration of what passion looks like in a lot of different formats. And it was a beautiful thing, how passionate we are. But I think in some ways our company emulates or resembles that trait in that we are really passionate about what we do. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to make a great, high quality product that creates a good experience, great flavor for consumers. And, you know, beyond the passionate side of it, I think there's a loyalty component within that, which is resembled in the people. And I think that to me is probably what makes our brand resonate in the markets that we're in, and really is a special thing. So we feel certainly honored and privileged to be able to do what we do in the market and have such great support from our customers, consumers, and all the feedback and interaction that we get is really just, it's great. It's a relationship that we have. You know, we continue to strive to be our best in what we do. And it's a reciprocal relationship there. It's really great.
Yeah. You know, you said something I think is key, and we share this in common, obviously. We're both passionate Philadelphia fans, right? Phillies, Eagles, bleed Eagle green, you know, season ticket holder for Phillies. I was at the All-Star game last night. And, you know, as a Philly fan, we should be rooting for the National League. We booed 90% of the players in the National League because we don't like them because they play for the other teams. And so you're sitting there the whole night and it's like this conundrum. Yeah. The only people you cheer for is the guys that were wearing your colors. That's Philly. And I'm proud of the fact that Philly's who they are, but you nailed it. It's a relationship. And I'll say the players in this town that have really done well are the people that realize it is a relationship. It is a give and take. And a brand realizing that, I think, is super important. I mean, Philly's true blue. And you've always been a part of the fabric of Philadelphia, and they're always going to be support you. I mean, when the Eagles were in, we celebrated that with them, with the green bags of Hearst potato chips and the sour cream and onion and all that. I mean, it's like I'll say it's a no-brainer, but it's you're building that relationship, and they love it. And so, social media obviously has helped a lot. I mean, how do you feel like how big do you feel like social media plays in that relationship?
Sure. Yeah, I think. Couple of things on that. One thing that I really have liked in the evolution of social media is just how much fun we can have with it. I think it opens you up to do things that are more interactive and fun and engaging compared to some of the traditional media outlets that you had the opportunity to do that with before. But I think the big thing is just, you know, kind of getting back to that connection. And, you know, we've come up with some programs and some different things that we've done where we've actually had input from consumers about what they want. You know, when we do the Flavored by Philly campaigns, I mean, we're going out there and saying, hey, here's what we want to build in these products and these partnerships. But what do you think? You know, right. You get a chance to vote, to have your say. And I mean, the shocking thing to me on that, which is just so illustrative of the relationship that we have there with consumers, is just how many people engage in that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when we first did Flavored by Philly and we opened it up and said, what flavors should we make? The submissions and how articulate people were about their submission, about how the cheesesteak should taste or, you know, some other product. It really just to me was awesome about how, you know, just seeing how much people are interested in it and how much time and effort they put into communicating that with us. So I think those are the type of things where I think social is great. We just, have so much more connection, so much more ability to connect with consumers and understand what they want. We can listen to them.
Yeah. And I think, again, you said it perfectly with that relationship. I mean, I think together has let it happen organically. You know, we asked them what they thought. A lot of companies, and it sounds obvious because of how successful it's been, but a lot of companies, I mean, look, your flavor profile, you guys are known for flavor. And whether we're talking like a tea brand or a potato chip or ice cream, I mean, flavors are really important. And many people wouldn't let the public, I'll say, have any kind of control over the flavors. And the fact that you guys let them do that on a limited basis, but a very successful one, I think is really credit's due. Everything sounds easy once it's successful, but it takes guts to say, okay, we're going to make a potato chip that's a Long Hots flavor. I mean, heck, half the country probably even know what a Long Hot is, right? But Philadelphia does. And obviously these things are really kind of successful and exciting. Yeah. So credit's due.
The Long Hot is a good illustration, back to your previous question about social media, is that we, of all the products that we ever came out with, that was an LTO product, and it was just an in and out. And of all the products that we've made, that was the one that we got consistently. We consistently got feedback. When are you going to bring that back out as an everyday item?
Yep.
And we did as of, maybe 6 months ago or so, we actually brought that back into the lineup as an everyday item. And that was great. But I think that one, also the Long Hot and Provolone, is a good illustration of how we're able to do things because we are more regional in our distribution in the Philadelphia region. We can do things that are a little bit more acute or a little bit more tied into the local flavor, versus just doing a spicy chip or something that would be appropriate for the entirety of the country. So those are fun things that we can do to kind of tie into the local flair.
Yeah. Philadelphians can be, they have strong opinions, let's face it, about food, about culture, about sports, about everything, makes them great. And they'll let you know quickly. They'll let you know how they feel. And if something feels fake, they're not going to approve it. So how do you approach that, the Philly food culture, in a way that earns the trust?
Yeah, great question. And in the time that I've been involved in sales, marketing, and R&D, I'd say there's been plenty of times when we've launched an item that was not well received, and we had to quickly pull that from the market. But, that's part of it. So I think the biggest thing is we try to listen. We try to really do our research when it comes to new products that we're going to launch. We do a lot of testing to see what people want. Mm-hmm. In some cases, like we just talked about, we actually get direct feedback from consumers about what they want to see in a product. So we'll tie some of that into our development. And then on the other side of that, I'd say we try to be, quick to adapt. You're going to have plenty of new items that do well, and you're going to have plenty that don't. So, we try to get 90% of the way there, all the research and insight that we can get, and then you just have to launch it. And then sometimes, it works great, and sometimes it doesn't for whatever reason, and you adapt and learn. So I think a little bit of the mindset of being okay with some failures from time to time, you're not always going to hit a home run. Has really kind of freed us up a little bit to try some new things and try some bolder flavors or bolder tie-ins or things like that, and see how they do.
Yeah, and I think that brings back what you said earlier is the third generation. I mean, look, let's face it. A lot of times it's like, hey, look, a successful family business, don't make eye contact, sit on the nest egg, go forward, hand it off, right? But you guys are entrepreneurial and you're willing to take risk. But then you got to give credit to the other generation saying, hey, go do it. And, it's okay. And it takes a whole commitment from the multiple generations. I think your family really is great at that. And I think that's awesome. The other thing too is we can come up with ideas. And when you're that close to the fans and the business, we can come up with stuff and make decisions quickly. You know, we've done things like whether it's for the Super Bowl or whether it's the World Series or anything in between, you know, we run it by you and you can run it through and we can get decisions. And because, you know, you got to work these days at the speed of social. So you can't sit on an idea or jump on something that's topical or trending and wait 3 weeks, you know, go do research, test it and everything else. You got to be right out there. And you guys have always been great at it. I mean, the only regret I have, I still have not been able to step on the throats of the Dallas Cowboys and the whole Lay's thing. You know, why would anyone want a potato chip in Philadelphia that's born in Texas? But we're going to get that one of these days. In fact, maybe this podcast is my answer to it. But
here's your chance.
But yeah, there was my chance. I took my big swing. So anyway, but it's always awesome and it's fun. And again, the Philadelphia relationship, it makes it even more fun because it's such a passionate city that you're going to get reaction and they're going to stand by it. And it's really, really pretty special. So one thing too, I want to talk about, cause it's so important is, you know, your family has always been very tied to community. It's always been a part of your family, the story. There's a lot of causes and organizations, you know, competing for your attention. How do you decide, you know, where to put your time and your resources?
Sure. Yeah. The philanthropic side of our company has really been inherent from the start. And again, goes back to my grandparents and just what they were passionate about. They just really loved supporting organizations that they thought, you know, were warranting and doing great work out there. Frankly, of anybody I've ever met in my life, they were the most generous people that I've ever met. And what's fun about that, and we talk about kind of carrying things through from the founders, I'd say that's one of the better illustrations in that we've over the years been able to develop a foundation, which is the J.S. Herr Foundation. And it's now run. We have a director that runs the foundation, but there's a board for that foundation that's made up of third generation family members. So we have the family come in and they get a presentation on the different entities that we want to invest in, different organizations, get a little background on kind of the work that they're doing in their different roles. And so we, as a family, are able to kind of do that together. So it's really been a positive on a few ways. Obviously, the impact that you can have. There's a lot of great organizations out there doing phenomenal things. The more that we can support them, the better. And then on the family side, being able to have that board represented by our third generation and them having the ability to have some say into where those funds are going is really, it's really a neat thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So we talked about family. We talked about Philly. We talked about community. So hers is growing in Philadelphia. It's the roots, but it's also growing nationally. Can a brand become more national without losing its sort of local flavor? And how do you approach that balance?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we historically and are still, I would call it almost maniacally focused on the Philadelphia area and region. If you look at where we invest in our, even if it, you look at the distribution side of it with how much we put into that to make sure we have great service. And then as we talked about some with the marketing aspect and the products that we have being appropriate. So we certainly have a very laser focused view of that region. But one of the things that we do that is maybe a lot of people don't even really know is that we have a huge product line. We have many products outside of what we're historically known for, which is potato chips, that we sell and distribute all over the country. And the interesting thing on with some of the distribution outside of the Mid-Atlantic is just that it's usually different product types. So a lot of our growth is from some of the other product lines that we have where we found what we would call a white space in the market. Whether that's a flavor differentiation, whether it's a channel that we feel like we can appropriately sell in. So we have a lot of, I guess, tools in the tool belt there with different product lines and sales channels that were able to do that. So I guess we would call it maybe walking and chewing gum. We think that there's plenty of white space out there for us to grow outside of this market, and also still intently focused on what we do here, kind of in our home territory, as we continue to grow the business and push it forward.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, all right. So we talked a lot about Flavor by Philly, and we know that your R&D and innovation does not just live and die on Passyunk Avenue. So how do you come up with all the flavors? You guys are known for flavors. Where do your best flavor ideas come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's not a one spot answer. So we do certainly do a lot of research and trying to identify trends that are emerging. And you talked about a minute ago, you know, having to develop at the speed of social. And that certainly applies on the product side too, that the evolution of trends seems to be accelerating. And, you know, it used to be that you would have a trend and it would be in the market for years. So you could kind of wait until you see it, make something to address it, and you'd be fine. It feels like those things accelerate now. So we certainly do a lot of research and try to anticipate things. We have great partners with our seasoning houses that feed us information sometimes from all over the world as to identifying trends and things like that. We also work a lot with or lean on a lot just our, I guess, inherent experience and intuition within the company. You know, sometimes a big company, I think, and even us to an extent, if you have a really good idea that's outside the box, sometimes it's hard for that to get the whole way through because you have so many processes that you have to work it through to justify bringing something to market. So we like to always have just a little bit of that opportunistic or entrepreneurial spirit when it comes to new items, where you say, hey, this might not check all the boxes for all the processes and testing that we would do, but we think there's something here and it's okay to try that from time to time. So long-winded way of saying we have a lot of different ways that, you know, we go about it from kind of the most sophisticated research side to the side of just using a little intuition and gut feel about something that could just be a good item.
Very cool. So when it comes to like the limited time flavors, I know they're a huge part of the snack industry. What role do they play at Hers?
Sure. LTOs are big with, you know, challenges in gaining distribution and just trying to provide excitement for the category. LTOs are really a great vehicle for that. I would say that for us, we've tried to increase the trying to think how you would say that exactly, maybe the sophistication of those LTOs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe in years past, you would just say, we're just going to do a couple weird flavors and throw them out there. We've tried to make that a little bit more strategic in that we have them tie into something. So we mentioned Flavor by Philly. That's been a great program, which I do have to admit in leadership, it's good to be vulnerable. So I do have to admit on that one that when that was first pitched to me, I didn't like the idea. Mm-hmm. I thought it was too complex. Mm-hmm. I was like, nobody's ever going to understand what you're trying to do. And you're going to put this out there. Nobody's going to respond anyway. And, but I was open-minded to it. And I let our team continue to develop it. And I'm so glad I did, because that's been our most successful LTO program ever, but that's kind of a fun one. But so on some of the other ones, I think the restaurant inspired LTOs is a good example of, instead of just doing a flavor that doesn't have any correlation to an event or a theme, we've tried to add some of that in. So our restaurant inspired LTOs have been great. And it really kind of ties back to something that we talked about earlier on, which is, you know, we're really trying to create an experience, something a little bit more than just a bag of chips. And, you know, for what we kind of, the root of what we're trying to do is make great quality, great tasting snacks that, you know, give somebody a little brightness in their day a nice little experience when you eat that mozzarella flavored kettle chip, or whatever it is. So it kind of all feeds into that in, just building a little experience or something that, gives you a little excitement in your day.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't enjoy eating potato chips? I mean, I like to meet that person. It's just impossible. So we talked a lot about flavors. We talked about Philly flavors, all these different flavors, all the innovation, all stuff. And I know the answer to this, at least I think I do, but I have to ask you, what's your favorite flavor of Hers potato chip?
Yeah. It kind of feels like you're asking me to pick my favorite child, right? Which is always.
What's your go-to? Because I think I know what it is. Maybe I'll be wrong.
Well, so I get that question quite often, and I really prefer, if I'm going to pick one, it would be the original blue bag of chips. Yep. And there's a couple of reasons. One, I think it's one of the most simple, beautiful snacks that you can have out of anything, and that it's made from potatoes, oil, and salt. You know, it's three ingredients. It tastes great. And it's really just a great snack. The other thing that for me is probably a little bit of the driver of that is that when I think back to how our company started, when my grandfather bought this little potato chip company and, you know, was learning how to do all this, the whole idea of starting a company, that was what he made. It was the original chip.
Yep.
And it was three ingredients. So there's certainly a nostalgic tie there for me that, you know, even if it's just a little remnant of it that, I think is pretty special, but
yeah,
I would share all that with the caveat that we have so many great flavors. Our kettle chips are unbelievable.
Yep.
Our extruded products, and including some of the ones that we're coming out with different oils, mm-hmm. things like that. We have so many great products that, really hard to pick one.
Yeah. Well, and you didn't disappoint. I thought that would be your answer. And look, hey, let's face it. That's the quote unquote flavor that built the company, right? And you know, all the other flavors they are excellent, but you go back to what got you to the dance, and that original potato chip is what founded this company, really. And I think that's a really cool thing that you, again, just like the family, you've never strayed far from your roots. Even though we try all these things, it's like you still go back to what got you to the dance. I think that's awesome. All right. So what are some of the biggest trends? You mentioned some things with lawyers. What are some of the biggest trends you're watching, responding to when it comes to snacks?
Yeah, it's really an interesting market and segment right now. Certainly the impact of GLP-1s in diet, that's mm-hmm. real. Looking a lot at ingredients, just as that evolves over time, which is really not anything new, in that there's always going to be evolution of ingredients and the oils that we fry in and those type of things. So we have to be cognizant of that. And, you know, kind of there's kind of two ways to look at it in my mind, in that there's the reality of what you hear. There's what you hear on the news, and which can sometimes be hyperbolic. And then you have what people really want to buy. And we try to focus on what consumers are truly interested in. And as we've talked about throughout this, I mean, that's the key for us, is listening and understanding what our consumers want, what their demands are, and then coming back and making sure that we're representing that through our products. So certainly in current time, we're looking a lot at ingredients. We're looking at alternative oils. We're looking at pack size changes. So a ton of evolution there. What you'll see kind of over the next few years in the total snack category.
It's fascinating. So I have one last question, and I ask this of everyone, and you can't say the blue bag. Okay. That answer is off the table. So if you had one last final meal, like one meal, what would you eat, you know, and why?
So that's an interesting twist on a question that, I've heard sometimes is if you could only eat one thing for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to get a slightly more morbid illustration, if you only have one meal left, I think I would say a ribeye steak.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I think that'll probably be my answer as well. So very well, well done. Well done. Well, Jim, as always, I could talk to you for hours. It was truly a pleasure. Congratulations on your success, your family's success, the brand success. And it was really an honor to have you on here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Really enjoyed talking to you and certainly appreciate our partnership there over the years, and excited for what's to come.
Awesome. Thanks.